Beloved listeners, South Africa goes to the polls on May 29, and the ANC, which has ruled South Africa unchallenged for 30 years, is in trouble. 2021, the ANC got less than 50% of the vote in elections, and that support base in the country's cities seems to be in terminal decline. Minor parties now are snapping at the heels for power in the lead-up to the election on May 29, including one endorsed by former President Jacob Zuma. Now, while the ANC is likely to remain in government for now, they almost certainly will have to seek allies. Now, joining me from Cape Town is veteran political reporter, and to say veteran reporter is, heavens above, a gross understatement, John Mattison. John, what's been the main challenges for Ramaphosa over the last few years?
Well, Philip, Ramaphosa took over party and a government that had been hollowed out by corruption so extreme that the term we use in South Africa is state capture. In other words, it wasn't just stealing, but stealing in the interests of a bunch of cronies to such a degree that it undermined the state's capacity to function and damaged the ruling party itself in much the same way. So he took over a hollowed-out system. And we had enormously high hopes that Ramaphosa, who has a very good reputation, I've known him many years, that he would be able to fix it and we'd start to see results quickly. And he's been a great disappointment.
I guess COVID would have also further weakened the economy.
Yes, COVID did weaken the economy, the point is about Ramaphosa is that I still think he's quite a decent man, and he tried to do the right thing with COVID. He followed the science. He did what the scientists told us to do, and we have some good scientists here who are really world experts on the subject. But the problem isn't COVID, really. The underlying problem is growth has stopped since 2008, when two things happened. The one, as you know, was the global financial crisis. But the other was the takeover of the party in the country by Jacob Zuma. And that's when the state capture really began. And since then, we've never had growth. So obviously, COVID was a setback. But the underlying problem is bigger than COVID.
John, you've known every ANC leader since Tambo, and every government leader from John Vorster to Zuma. Can you remind us about how Zuma and his fall from grace?
Zuma has been battling court action over corruption in South Africa. Had a very large arms deal around about 25 years ago. And he was the most high-profile person to be charged with taking bribes at that time. And he's done something that we are used to seeing Donald Trump do nowadays, but he started even before Trump, or at least before we knew Trump to be doing this. He has what South Africans call the Stalingrad approach to court cases. He finds delaying tactics, even if they're hopeless legal cases, they cause delays, which is the whole point. So since the early 2000s, he's been doing that. And President Thabo Mbeki fired him as the deputy president at that time. And he used that firing, to establish himself as a kind of victim. And he built up a regional base, an ethnic base among Zulu-speaking South Africans in the KwaZulu-Natal province, which is the most populous province and therefore most influential in the ANC. And he came back and he challenged Mbeki, and he came into power as president of first of the party and then of the country. a lot of people backed him because they had grudges against Mbeki. Mbeki had alienated the left of the party, the trade unions and others. And so that for various reasons, he also had rather wacky ideas about confronting AIDS, unlike Cyril Ramaphosa, who handled COVID as best he possibly could. And so a lot of people supported him, thinking that he would be a more enlightened and more people-oriented leader than Mbeki was. Mbeki was seen as rather an intellectual, out-of-touch intellectual and with conservative economic policies. I'm simplifying, of course. And so Zuma became president, but the corruption and the state capture got so extreme. You actually saw South Africa at its best. We had journalists who did terrific investigative work. Our courts, to a fair degree, played their role, perhaps a little slowly, but they did. And eventually, civil society, journalists and others had exposed so much about the rampant corruption, what we call state capture, that Zuma was forced to step down in favor of Cyril Ramaphosa. And since then, he's been, he still has court cases. He got a jail sentence a couple of years ago for contempt of court. And he created such havoc in the country. There was a sort of an uprising where 300 people died violently. He went back to prison, but Ramaphosa found a way to let him out of prison by declaring an amnesty for a whole group of prisoners that included him. So he came out, but he's still fighting his court cases, and that's the underlying issue, I think, that's driving his politics.
John, please explain why he hasn't been formally expelled from the ANC.
I mean, that's a bit of a technicality in the ANC. Look, the ANC leadership these days is not good. It's nothing like the days of Mandela, who you and I remember. And so they're rather scared. They know he has backing in one region, but it's very strong backing, and there's no other ANC leader who could match it. And so they didn't want to expel him. But of course, he weaponizes that like everything else against them. He's formed a new party in the last few months. It's called the Umkhonto we Sizwe Party, which means Spear of the Nation, and it's a logo and a name taken from the ANC's military wing, and he's tried to co-opt it as his own, and he's running against the ANC and regionally at least making real headway.
Now, we'll come back to that a little later. You wrote in your book, Cyril's Choice, of the moment of Ramaphosa's rise to leadership in 2019, you had high hopes back then for his leadership, didn't you?
I really did. I've known him a long time. As I say, I saw him the other day at the Cape Town Press Club. And, you know, he's still a charming man. He's got immense charisma. I think he's not a bad man in any way. But his performance in the leadership has been terribly poor. And I think there are a couple of elements to that. The one has been that the party and the state has been so much more hollowed out than perhaps we even realized. But the other problem has been that Ramaphosa himself is not really a fix-it man. He's not really a reformer in the way you would think of. You know, when he came to power, he announced the New Dawn. And many of us history buffs said, this is going to be like the New Deal of Franklin Roosevelt. But it was nothing like that. He announces things with great fanfare, but he doesn't follow them up.
So what do you think is in the nature of his ANC government that makes them unable to fix things, unable to grapple with some of the huge problems?
There are a couple of things. I think that the party has made several long-term bad choices. And by the way, I mean, if you look at African history, post-colonial governments, liberation movements that become governments, there's been a history of this, that the new government comes to power, they're not very ready to govern. They tend to develop cronies around them, and they fund them. And so the urban elite tend to benefit more than the rest of the population, whether it's a military or a civil service or teachers or urban unions or a combination of the above. And that's what's happened here. And what's made it harder to get over is the fact that the ANC adopted a policy very early that all appointments, all state appointments, would go through the party. And of course, that has led to a very non-meritocratic appointment system for civil servants and everyone in the government.
So you don't get promoted for efficiency, you get promoted because of your cultural cachet within the ANC.
Yes. Well, it's your political cachet, really. If you know the right people and you're an insider, people think it's your turn. And we actually have access to the minutes of a committee where the ANC makes these decisions. And you see that the decisions are not always just for the party, but they're not about merit. I mean, some of them say, we don't have enough women, let's put a few more women on, which is fine, or regional balance, which is also fine, or racial balance, which is fine in principle. But they don't say, well, you know, who really performed well and who really didn't perform well. And so the minutes show quite disturbingly that the decisions really merit barely comes up.
So how bad are things likely to turn out for the ANC in the election next month? They've already lost the big urban centres like Joburg, Cape Town, and it's predicted that they'll lose Durban.
That's right, yes. They lost Cape Town more than a decade ago, and that's in the hands of the Opposition Democratic Alliance. They lost Johannesburg for the first time in 2016, and then again lost it in 2021, the election you were pointing to, which was a municipal election. And this time, all the polls show they're going to lose Durban. And
so we're looking at a rural party.
Yes, essentially. Those three urban centres carry the vast majority of South Africa's economy.
Now, historical legacy means that someone who grew up under apartheid will always vote ANC.
Well, that applies to people who are getting older, you know. I mean, you know, in America, you have the phenomenon they used to call yellow dog Democrats. Democrats would vote for a yellow dog as long as the candidate was a Democrat. And we do have the same thing here. People, if you remember Mandela and remember your liberation and the end of apartheid was brought about by the ANC, it's very, very hard to turn against them. And it's also very easy for propaganda to tell you that anything else will be a return to apartheid.
Now, of course, for the young who didn't experience apartheid directly, this is, almost mythological.
Well, that's right. In fact, you have a whole lot of new political parties that have mushroomed out, quite a few of them by younger people. I mean, this is essentially the last election where any of the Mandela or even close to Mandela apartheid fighters are still in powerful political positions. The next election in 2029, there'll be none left. Ramaphosa will have reached his term limit, so he won't be running. And so in 2029, you're really going to see a much bigger fall in the ANC.
Can we look at some of the minor parties, the contenders who the ANC are likely to form alliance with?
Yes, well, the ANC has a difficult decision to make. I'm just talking to somebody about it this morning. The next biggest party after the ANC is the Democratic Alliance. It's a multiracial party, but the leadership are mostly white, and it's a traditional white liberal party. but has actually become more conservative with time. But they have a record of efficiency. They run Cape Town and the province of the Western Cape and quite a few cities and towns, and they run them relatively well. There's not much corruption and service delivery is pretty efficient. And everybody can see that this is a stark contrast from the rest of the country where the ANC rules. But of course, ideologically, they're far away from the ANC or where the ANC believes itself to be. So many people are predicting and fearing that the ANC will choose to go with one of the populist, one or more populist parties.
But there's also, at the other side of the spectrum, the economic freedom fighters. They're a Marxist, Leninist, and Black Nationalist Party.
Yes, well, that's what I refer to as populist, and as well as Zuma's party, the MK party. Both of them are populist. They don't have a really sound economic analysis. I mean, they use Marxist terminology. I'm not sure how much they've truly grasped, but they are populist parties that would send the markets into free fall, because they talk about state ownership of business, of land, and so on, and mass transfer of land and property. And the markets are very fearful of that. So the question is, will the ANC go with them, who you might argue, you know, as ex-ANC breakaway parties have more in common with the ANC, or will they go with the DA and its allies, who are considered more conservative and less ideologically comfortable with them, but would govern better?
John, it's a bit of a Rubik's Cube. Is there also not a party that's aimed at the young?
There are a number of parties aimed at the young, and I met with one of them this week, the leader, Mzongeza Zibi, is the leader of a party called Rise Mzansi. But the truth is, on the polling, none of them have got a lot of traction.
So they're putting their hands up, but not enough people are taking notice. Okay, now, one of the new kids on the block in English is Spear of the Nation, abbreviated as MK. Now, that's a left-wing populist South African political party as well.
Well, that's the party I was telling you, that's the party of Zuma. And he has co-opted that term because that term was the name of the ANC's military wing during the anti-apartheid era. And Zuma is the head of that, and he's hardly young. But although they may call themselves left wing, their real mobilization is ethnic. It's mostly Zulu speakers, predominantly.
And this is the mob that would push for a takeover of white farms in some way, but they don't clarify how this could be achieved.
Yes, their manifesto is very thin. The other day Zuma said that our legal system, which is based on Roman Dutch law, is no good for Africans, and we need to scrap it in favor of African law. Now, he never clarified what that means, but what it means is revolutionary, because it would mean getting rid of the constitution that the ANC negotiated and Zuma used to support as president of the ANC. So that would be a radical shift. We don't know where it's in. Nothing has been fleshed out.
But a new poll gives MK 36%. That's a very significant vote. It would make them surely one of the biggest parties in the province.
Philip, 36% is in one province only. That's the KwaZulu-Natal province. And that would translate to somewhere in the low teens nationally, maybe about 13%. Now, it's a very new party, so we're going to have to wait for a few more polls. But at 13%, it could be the third biggest party, but well behind the first two.
Okay, to clarify this, Zuma might come back to haunt the ANC and indeed South Africa and get back into government via this MK.
Yes, he could, but to be honest, I don't think he will go into government. You know, Zuma says he wants to get two-thirds of the vote, but there are several other parties that are promising us that they're going to get over 50%. But I'm afraid that's not true, for one. Perhaps I should be glad to say that's not true. As we just discussed, Zuma's real support is around 13%, and that will mean, no matter what he says, that he's dependent on an alliance with Cyril Ramaphosa. The one wild card is if he gets 36% in KwaZulu-Natal province, one of the nine provinces, then he could make a play for a coalition to govern that province. And that is a possibility that's very hard to flesh out this early in the race.
And as you point out, John, he's using the playbook of Donald Trump, and Zuma is in politics to stay out of the slammer.
Absolutely, yes. I don't think Zuma, I know Zuma. In fact, he stayed in my house when he came back from exile. And Zuma, I don't think he wants to go back into politics, certainly not in a more junior role, which he'd have to accept. But what he really needs is so much support that he can threaten the government, you put me in jail again, and I can cause you a lot of damage.
I'm going to re-ask a question I asked you earlier. The ANC is afraid of Zuma, so why the hell do they not expel him from the party once and for all?
I think you've answered your own question, because they're afraid of him. They're trying to take their time and tread softly and win back support. And they're scared that if they act too harshly on Zuma, it could alienate his erstwhile supporters, especially in the KwaZulu-Natal province. That's the one place the ANC cares deeply about and is currently weak.
So Ramaphosa will probably be the president after this election. Who are they likely, in your view, to seek coalition with?
Right. Well, I have a view which is disputed by some because it sounds on the face of it odd. I believe that in the end, Ramaphosa will choose to go in with the Democratic Alliance. That is the predominantly white-led party that governs in the Western Cape.
That sounds counterintuitive.
Yes, but now let me make another counterintuitive point. It's easier, I believe, for the ANC to go in with a party with whom they are not competing for votes. They don't compete for constituencies. And so although it might sound good for them to go in with a party that thinks like them, if they went in with either of the populist so-called left parties, EFF or Zuma's MK, either of those would be very explosive for the ANC. I think it would be very difficult for them to lead. And because both of these populist parties are led by very wily leaders who act very tactically, skillfully, could be very difficult for Ramaphosa.
Another issue, will Ramaphosa likely to continue to support South Africa's genocide case in the International Court of Justice?
Oh, yes. In fact, it's a vote getter. They think of it as a vote getter. You know, foreign policy normally doesn't have much impact on domestic politics, but they think it's a win for them and they have precious few wins to call on.
What about Russian and Chinese influence on the ANC?
Well, the what has really emerged from Zuma's time and has continued is that there is one particular Russian oligarch who has interests in a mining company, a manganese mine in South Africa, and the profits from that mine are going to the ANC, and he is their most prominent funder. So you can't rule out Russian influence on the ANC right now.
I've had the pleasure, indeed the honour, of speaking with veteran political reporter John Matteson about the upcoming South African elections on May 29th. John is the author of Cyril's Choice, An Agenda for Reform, and God, Spies and Lies, Finding South Africa's Future Through Its Past. Thanks for your time, John.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.